Welcome back to Sound Medicine. I'm Barbara Lewis. Every once in a while, a guest on this program really makes an impact, both on us and our listeners. Dr. Sid Schwab is one of those guests. He describes himself as a mostly retired surgeon who now lives in the Pacific Northwest. He came to our attention because he's both a prolific and really elegant writer. I had the privilege of speaking with him earlier this year. So when we read a recent post about some of the unwelcome surprises that surgeons might encounter in the middle of an operation, well, this time Sound Medicine's Jill Dittmeyer jumped at the chance to speak with him herself.
Well, Dr. Sid Schwab, welcome to Sound Medicine.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
And we're happy to have you back again. In our previous conversation with you, you were very candid with us and telling us about what it's like to do surgery, what it feels like to actually make that cut, open up that patient, fix those things, and then sew them right back up. But today we're going to talk about surgery in a different way, when the surgery fails, some of those bad outcomes. How often does that happen? When a surgeon opens up the patient and then finds that the disease has progressed or the anatomy has changed, how often does that occur and what do you do?
Well, you know, it's a lot less common nowadays than it used to be because we have so much better imaging techniques now that it's fairly rare. When I was in training, we used to do so-called exploratory laparotomies where we, you know, felt like we had to go take a look to see what was going on. Nowadays, it's fairly rare that you get big surprises about what's going on inside because patients have had an MRI or a CAT scan or something in many cases, but there are still anatomic variations that you can't entirely anticipate, and sometimes despite the excellent imaging, you can find things are different from what you expected. In fact, although I'm retired, I still do assisting on some big cancer operations, and it just happened the other day. We went in expecting to be able to do a curative operation and found sort of against the preoperative findings that the cancer really had spread beyond our ability to remove it, and you know, then you have to face the patient and the family and give them this really disappointing and completely unexpected news. It's pretty unpleasant.
That's writer and surgeon Dr. Sid Schwab speaking with Sound Medicine's Jill Dittmeyer. His recent blog post caught our attention, so we invited him to tell us the backstory and share part of what he wrote.
I have this recollection of having operated on a little baby, a situation called pyloric stenosis, where it happens in newborns, like about 6 weeks after birth, typically, where the muscle at the end of the stomach has sort of grown too fast and the stomach won't empty, so they're vomiting. And the operation is very simple. You just sort of cut that muscle and it opens up, but there's a possibility of leaving a hole in the intestine when you do it, and you know about it, and you make sure you don't, and if you happen to, then you put a little stitch in it and they're fine. But there's a danger of creating a hole in the intestine and not recognize it. You know, it's a little, somebody's 6 week old baby, proud, happy little parents, and you're telling them they need an operation. So I had done it on one little baby, and it went just as routine, and then I get a call about 2 a.m. saying that the baby had a fever and his abdomen was rigid, which can be a sign of infection. So I wrote this thing I'll read a little bit if it won't bother you. So I said, I'll be right there. I tell her the words, finding great resistance, barely squeezing out of my suddenly constricted throat. It's easy to describe how I felt because I felt that way again whenever I think about it. Had my wife awakened, she'd have seen me appear ghost white, I'm certain. My stomach was hollow. My hands were ice. I could barely tie my shoes. My hands were shaking and not following commands. It felt as if a cold hand were gripping my neck. I could hardly swallow. I splashed water on my face, made it to my car, raced to the hospital. As I drove, hands so tightly on the wheel that they were getting numb, I was thinking I'd do whatever was in my power to save the kid, do whatever it takes, never leave him until it was over, and then I'd never, never, ever do a pyloromyotomy again. And if he did poorly, I'd never operate again. This was a baby, somebody's precious baby. As I headed to the pediatric floor, I entered the baby's room. I saw the nurse standing by. I felt as if a million eyes were on me, accusing and hateful. And there he was, fussy face, flushed with fever, but moving around like a baby, looking not so bad. His belly was soft as, well, a baby's bottom. An x-ray looked fine. So who knows what it was. The kid did fine and went home as promised in a day or so. I drove home nearly limp, still shaking, barely able to control the car, wrung out like a wet sock. I lay on the bed exhausted, relieved but absolutely spent. An hour or so later, I dragged myself to work. And the next time a pediatrician called for a consult with a kid with pyloric stenosis, I took a deep breath, considered it carefully, and said, I'll be right there.
Wow. How did you go about rechanneling that energy? I mean, you were obviously at one of the lowest points of your life, but yet you were able to bring that back up and go into that another surgery again.
Well, part of it was, of course, being greatly relieved, and I honestly don't know what I would have done if, in fact, it had turned out that I had injured that kid. And my God, if he had actually not survived it, at very least, I would have never operated again. And honestly, the kind of person I am, I might not have lived myself. I mean, I couldn't. To live with something like that, I don't know how people do it. I think some surgeons, now, you know, that's an extreme case. But it bothered me my whole career if anything was less than perfect. Even a little incision had a little spot on it that didn't heal just right. You know, that stuff bothered me like crazy. And yet other surgeons can say, and it's probably healthier, say, you know, I did the best I could, and that's the way it is. You want some kind of balance between driving yourself nuts over every little thing that isn't absolutely perfect on the one hand, and being so cavalier about it that, you know, hey, did the best I could, things happen, who cares, you know. You wouldn't want that surgeon. You probably, if you had to choose between the two, you'd want the one who drove himself crazy, but it made me burn out probably a lot younger than I should have if I'd been a little less demanding of myself.
Do you feel that many surgeons feel that same way as you did?
Well, I suppose closer to what I did than the one who would say, hey, you know, things happen. But I think maybe not all of them would drive themselves quite as crazy as I tended to drive myself. I would always, you know, when I would hire younger partners, I'd say, look, you know, give yourself a break, take some time off. Don't kid yourself that the world can't get along without you as a surgeon. So I think I took it to an extreme, but I guess, like I said, if you wanted a choice in the matter, you'd want the guy who took it too hard than the guy who didn't care, I guess.
Well, do you think surgeons are being prepared for some of these potential bad outcomes?
Sure, I think that's a huge part of training. In fact, I think that's a really a big part of surgical training, and I used to think, maybe it's unfair of me, that was a critical difference between the kind of training I went through back in, you know, those long gone days where we sort of lived in the hospital and we were just, you know, we were treated, you know, if anything went wrong, man, we were castigated and it was all hung out like dirty laundry. What it was doing was inculcating, I think, a sense of limits and a sense of knowing when you're beyond your capabilities. You know, in the time when I was in training, I thought family practice docs, for example, got taught the exact opposite. They'd say, look, you know enough that you can keep your patients away from specialists as much as possible, and whenever you let your patient see a specialist, it's a failure. So that I saw a lot of people who were taken care of too long by people who didn't really know that they didn't know what they were doing. And I think that's a huge part of what it takes to be a good doctor of any kind, is not only teaching you so that you know stuff, but also making sure that you know when you don't know stuff.
And how about the patient? What can we do to be ready to help make sure there are no bad outcomes?
I think there's a few things, you know, that easier said than done. I think possibly the worst thing a patient can do to increase their risk of problems after surgery is smoke. And so don't smoke. And if you are a smoker, try to stop. You know, there's been studies that show that even a week or so ahead of surgery is better than not stopping at all. And if you need help, you know, with nicotine patches or whatever. So smoking is a bad thing. Being sedentary is a bad thing. So if you have the option, the time to do a little working out, but just simply walking. I think walking is the best thing you can do ahead of surgery, and being prepared to do it afterwards too. And then, you know, to be completely honest, it's surprising to me, you know, patients sometimes they're embarrassed to say that they, you know, smoke or that they're although it's hard to hide that. But, you know, they need to be upfront about the medications they're taking, drugs, legal or otherwise. They need to be honest about that. And then, you know, follow your surgeon's advice, whatever they tell you. And you recognize, of course, that surgeons, you know, there's some people that feel strongly, you know, with their post-op instructions, and you could get 180-degree different instructions from patients. People would ask me, say, going home after a gallbladder operation, well, how soon can I have sex? And I'd say, well, I think you should wait till you get home.
So, some good humor and some good advice this afternoon. Yeah. Thank you for sharing your time with us, Dr. Schwab.
Okay, it's a pleasure.
Dr. Sid Schwab is the author of Cutting Remarks, Insights and Recollections of a Surgeon. We'll put a link to his blog on our website. Just go to soundmedicine.org.